Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now it's time for the Friday Gathering, and this week we're joined by journalist and commentator Alison O'Connor. We have environment correspondent with the Irish Independent, Caroline O'Doherty. We have Thomas Byrne, Fianna Fáil TD for Meath East and outgoing Minister of State, and Matt Carthy, Sinn Féin TD for Cavan Monaghan. And thank you all for coming in this morning. Now, let's talk about what's happening in the news. Thomas, there seems to be a lot of anger building over the salary top-ups, the allowances granted by the government or under review, and it would seem on the way for the junior ministers and the super juniors, that could push the earnings up to around 200,000. And I mentioned there, you're an outgoing Minister of State yourself. Will you explain to us why that money is going up? What's going on?
Well, there's no salary top-ups. In fact, under the last government, we all took a 10% cut on the entire salary, not just in the ministerial portion. And that's there. What is being looked at is that a Minister of State who has to stay in Dublin, of which there's plenty of people from around the country, would have the same entitlement as a TD, as a backbench TD, which they don't at the moment.
Right.
If a Minister of State has to stay down the country, their accommodation is looked after. But if they come from down the country to serve in Dublin from 4 hours away or more, that is going to be looked at. It's going to be reviewed. There's no decisions made.
And it wasn't an issue the last time, so it was raised by the new people coming in this time.
I'm not familiar as to how it was raised, but it certainly is a fact. And it's going to be looked at. Mm-hmm. There's no commitment to do anything. It's going to be reviewed.
That's all I can say.
And there's no salary top-up, just government. To be clear.
So no top-ups, Matt. So what's the problem?
Well, I think a lot of people were looking at the programme for government this week and the continuity programme for government, as I would call it, because all it is a continuation of the policies of the past 5 years, some repetition of commitments that have already been broken by the government.
People were
wondering what have they been spending the last 5 weeks doing in terms of the negotiations between Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and the Independents. And it was clear what they were talking about was jobs for the boys, which boys would get which jobs and what sweeteners would be added as incentives, because as has been stated repeatedly, and I actually believe them, there's been nothing for the constituencies of any of the independent TDs guaranteed, other than they will get to cut the ribbons on the projects that were already happening in their constituency.
You don't and really that believe that, get, do you?
Yeah, absolutely. They got jobs. They got salary bumps, and that's what enticed them into supporting, as I say, the same failed policies that we've seen over the past 5 years. And now we have the ludicrous situation this week where government parties, the independents themselves, and it appears some parties of the opposition, namely Aintu, are facilitating an absolute charade where not only will they get the perks of government, but they also want to get what are the limited resources allocated to the opposition.
This is the row about the speaking time, where they're going to be both in and out. So they'll be in the technical group for additional speaking rights for opposition, but they're also supporting the government. It is wild, Thomas.
None of this is decided.
Well, it's going to be up to Verona Murphy. She's on your team too.
It'll be up to the Dáil. Sorry, Verona Murphy is not on our team. Verona Murphy is the independent Count Cora of the Dáil. This will be up to the Dáil. The Dáil decides how it operates. Now the business committee is there to kind of just help things along every week, but the Dáil itself by vote decides how the Dáil operates. And every TD from every party or none is entitled to go in there and speak and ask questions. Now, when I was first elected in 2007, we were kind of quietly told, oh, look, you don't ask parliamentary questions, you don't raise issues on the order of business. And it wasn't really the practice at the time for government TDs to do that. That has changed considerably over the last number of years. And everybody there asks questions. Everybody's entitled to have their say and speak out. And that is not going to change under this arrangement.
But do you think it's fair that they would have speaking rights as part of a technical group but be supporting the government?
But sure. If Fianna Fáil backbencher has speaking rights in the Dáil.
And you know it's different,
but
Thomas,
it's not because different what, because no, it's not going to take away.
Thomas is right. Every TD, government or opposition, has an opportunity to put questions to the minister, to have those questions selected, to raise matters under topical issues, to raise matters in questions for the Taoiseach. What this refers to is a limited period of time in dull debates, particularly in terms of private members' motion, allocations to committees, things like that are bespoke for the opposition. Mm. And what we have is a group of TDs that are in government, that have negotiated a programme for government, a bad one albeit, who want to have the benefits of that, but also want to eat into the limited resources of the opposition. And as I say, unfortunately and very regrettably, it appears that Aintu and Carol Nolan are facilitating them in that. But at the end, ultimately, Thomas presents this charade that it will be the Dáil that decides, when you know that Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and Independents now have a majority within the Dáil. So the question I put to you, Thomas, if it's put to a vote in the Dáil, will you support this charade?
The Dáil will decide how
Will you support
and
it?
In the last Dáil,
so as a member of the Dáil, will you support this charade?
In the last Dáil, the whole issue of speaking time was changed around as well, because the bigger parties, including Sinn Féin, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, weren't happy with the way their speaking time was allocated. So this isn't strictly an issue between government and opposition.
This is a side deal that has been
done.
Yes,
but
it is.
You had the same issue as us the last time, a number of years ago, in that your backbenchers weren't getting same speaking time as Independents, and there were definitely changes made in terms of the Dáil's speaking time at that point. These things can be worked out, will be worked out, and the fundamental principle is that everybody's entitled to speak.
But do you support independent TDs who support the government having more rights than backbench Fianna Fáil TDs in terms of allocation of opposition time?
And
but that's what the proposal is.
They won't
that's
have
what has
more
been
time,
brought to
but they
the.
They will that not
is,
have more
that
time.
That is what has been brought not, to the to the Dáil through the proposal of a so-called technical group, where you have a group of TDs who have negotiated a programme for government, who have endorsed a programme for government support in the same way as backbench Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael TDs, but they will uniquely also be able to, within the opposition resources, have an additional benefit. So not only did they want the perks and the side deals of being in government, they want the benefits that some of the
opposition there shouting at each other. This will not be an issue next week. Guarantee you.
Why?
Because I think it's just one of these things that's come up because they can't find anything in the programme of government to complain about. Oh, this is a huge issue. It's not
that's
a huge issue.
Nothing in
this
the
is the type of issue that's worked out on a regular basis in the Dáil. It's as simple as that.
Alison, what's your take on that?
Well, first of all, generally on the programme for government, I think Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have essentially done what the people voted for in terms of we had a quite boring campaign, what people saw as a boring election. But I think what's been done now has, in relatively fast time, I think, when you consider the break for Christmas, which was deserved by all, they've put together this programme for government. Is it the most exciting document we've ever seen? No. But I think this sense that what's coming down the road, people want a government to be in place. I think they've done well in that they've a good, the government, again, the two main parties, they have a good cushion with all of the independents. But it's what is within that deal now, as you're discussing. And I think it is, I'm inclined to agree with Matt, it is having your cake and eating it, thinking you can go in with the government and have your speaking time as well. I think it'll be very interesting to see what the Crown Court of Rona Murphy does when you considered one of the first things she did when she sat into the Crown Court as chair was to mention the fact that it was Michael Lowry who had proposed that to her. So you could say in that job to her in sort of mafia parlance that, you know, she owes him one. So that'll be very interesting to see what decision she makes. It's up to her next week as to how that goes. And I think overall I'm thinking about all of these independents who have gone in now and who've got these jobs and this element of fumbling in the greasy till as because this is what registers with people in terms of
They've said time and time and time again they did not get constituency deals.
That's the point I'm about to make. I'm wondering how I'd feel if I was a constituent of one of those independents and had given them a number one and they've gone for the job and not doing anything for the constituency. And you add to that then the idea of what people are being told about the money and how it's I think it's
but
just
you know what?
Because
I was,
if you
I
think about the Healy Rays even.
On that point, I was reading Gerard Howland this morning and he said watch for the review of the National Development Plan. That's indeed where you'll see if there were deals done that were not being told about, we might see evidence of it there.
I'm a TD in government. I want to get stuff done in my constituency. Stuff will be done in my constituency and has always been done and I've always advocated for that. And independent TDs, I've no doubt, are completely the same. And if they're in the government wings, then they have certainly much more of an influence over that process. So they will be delivering things for the constituencies, but the difference is they don't have an agreement with a list of projects that they're going to achieve for their constituencies.
Not in writing that we know of.
I certainly have a list of projects for my constituency. Yeah. And I'm sure Matt has too, but I'm in government and I'm going to work really hard to deliver them.
As I understand it, they may have had lists during negotiations, but no list was handed over. And of course they're going to attempt to. They want to get re-elected, so of course they're going to attempt to do what they can. But they don't have the same leverage, as we say, previously when you had Jackie Healy-Rae and the others, where there was actual packages agreed, or even in terms of Dublin Inner City and
Tony Gregory
in the past. So they don't have as much leverage there in that. Or for instance, I was going to say in the Healy-Rae package, as I understand it, it's quite a high gift, if you like, that Michael Healy-Rae becomes a junior minister. But my understanding of that is that Danny's vote is factored in on that. So it's the vote of the two of them, and that Danny then gets, for instance, a committee chair. So I mean, that's how the government is able to say to these people, look, you've been paid off, you know. So there's that going on as well.
Caroline, what's your take on all of this and how it might play out next week when we come to adjudicating on the speaking rights issue in particular?
You know, listening to all this, you know, and the salaries are important. The figures that are being bandied about there are hugely important. They're huge salaries in the context of the average worker. And that's not to say that ministers for state shouldn't be well paid for a job that, if it's done well, you know, it's very, very demanding and stressful. But these are big salaries that are going to go to some people who don't have a lot of experience in these fields. And I think people are, I think if there's a well of public cynicism around politicians there, it's just getting a bit deeper. Because before we do anything, before we look at a policy or look at a piece of legislation or pick up where they left off on legislation that was left hanging in the last government, we're having rows over, you know, these speaking rights, we're having rows over salaries. That's not a good start for any government. And when the speaking rights, when that comes out, I think there is an issue there of just, you know, independence sort of riding two horses. So, you know, if this turns out to be a good government in terms of that it's productive and it's stable and it's successful, you know, at the end of the 5 years, when that's their first sort of personal performance review, if you like, it's not like the private sector where you get your 6 months probation and an annual performance review. These people will be getting these salaries for the next 5 years. They'll be able to say, well, we were part of that successful government. If it's not a great government, it doesn't achieve much, or it's troubled and it stagnates, they'll be able to say, well, we were in opposition. So, you know, they can't lose. So they're in a very, very privileged position.
I think the difficulty, though, Caroline, is that their constituents and the people of Ireland have lost, because the independents could have gone into the programme for government discussions with projects that they wanted, not necessarily for their own constituencies, but for their regions, with a demand for a fundamental change in some of the key areas that have failed. Like the line that I have to say has struck me in the programme for government. I think most people's interactions with the health services are probably bringing people or family or friends to an emergency department, where universally the experience is negative. The programme for government, the big solution that they have is that they will continue to review capacities in emergency departments. That's it. One line. That, to me, is, you know, it's not even a lack of vision. It's a lack of even trying to pretend that anything different is going to emerge from this government. So therefore, I think the brand of independence has been damaged. I think you're going to have this bizarre situation where the Healy-Rae's and other independents are going to be supporting an increase in the carbon tax, for example, every single year over the next 5 years, despite the fact that they know, because we've heard them say it, that that's going to impact on people in rural communities who are dependent on their cars, who have solid fuel heating systems in their car, and they can't afford the alternatives to those things.
Alison said there a minute ago that the programme for government essentially is what Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael in the main promised in the course of this election, and that is what people voted for.
That's what about 42% of people voted for. Yeah, we accept that. I'm disappointed in that. I take our responsibility that we didn't get a higher proportion of the vote, albeit we increased our number of TDs. But that doesn't make it any less politically valid for me to say I think the approach that the last government took was wrong on so many areas, particularly housing, health and disability services, and in terms of how they address the cost of living crisis. And it certainly doesn't negate my right as a member of the Dáil to say I think it would be a fundamental mistake, and it is a fundamental mistake, to simply carry on as war for the next 5 years, because I think the consequences of that will be profound.
Is that what it is? Just carrying on what was started 5 years ago?
No, it's carrying on from the general election, from the manifestos that the two parties put before the people, and the electorate voted on those manifestos, and then the two parties have come together with some independents, because we didn't have the full numbers to have an overall majority, and we want to make sure that this would be a lasting government. And essentially, the manifestos have been melded together, you know, incorporating the ideas of both parties, incorporating the mandates of both parties. And there's some really good Fianna Fáil ideas in there, the transport police, for example.
Yeah, but there's not much in there from the independents, is there? It's just the two of you, really.
No, the independents were involved in the talks there. But I think what the independents heard from the public at the time of the general election was the need for a government and the need for stability in a world where stability is really at a high price at the moment.
But is that what happened, what Alison says, that you gave them the jobs, but you didn't give them any real influence over the programme for government?
Well, anybody who has a job is going to have influence in the government. They have influence over the programme for government. They are as concerned about the issues that we've identified there. The issue of disabilities, the issue of housing, absolutely critical. The issue of rural rural life and farming, absolutely
It's
crucial.
An awful woolly document, though, isn't it, with the mention of reviews and reports and keeping an eye on things without concrete promises.
There's 157 pages, I think, in this document, which is in
relatively small
print.
I'm talking about the language.
No, relatively small print.
If an opposition party produced that, we would be pillared.
It's not the case at all. From all sides
in terms of,
Thomas, you know you're struggling when you're mentioning the fact that it's relatively small print.
No, but my point is that there's a massive amount of commitments there in terms of how the government is going to operate over the next 5 years. And it has to be. A general document with specific commitments as well.
But you can review and you can look and you can examine stuff. You don't actually have to do anything because you haven't promised
anything. Well, look, when the election the last time, the manifesto said nothing about COVID, for example, because COVID wasn't a thing during the general election campaign and circumstances dictated otherwise. When the programme for government was put together the last time, the Ukraine war wasn't a factor, but it became a serious factor. So governments have to adapt and you can't have it too prescriptive, but I would say that it is actually pretty prescriptive. And the point I'm making about the length of the document is that there's a huge amount of commitments there. Invite people to read them, to look at them, and then the government will implement these. Civil servants will be looking very closely at this document because that's their workload for the next number of years as well. That's the direction they've been given by the politicians, and opposition will look at it as well, because you'll be rather than saying what you just said there, in about 3 years' time you'll be looking at page whatever, say, look, you've committed to doing this and you haven't done it, or you've half done it. You'll be using this document as your Bible as well, if you've any sense.
That's optimism on the part of
any sense. Our intention is that we would comply with it.
The difficulty is there are some areas where there are very clear commitments, and the commitments are to continue doing what they have been doing. Yes, things will happen in the course of the lifetime of the government that we can't foresee, but the one thing that we, or the things that we know right now, is that there is a crisis in housing, there's a crisis in our health services, that lots of people are struggling with a cost of living crisis, that we're not meeting our climate targets, for example, and in all rafts, and in all areas government have failed, the existing policies have failed, and what the incoming government have agreed to do is to continue those policies regardless.
You mentioned climate there, and we have Caroline with us, and your area of focus and expertise is climate. How do you rate the programme for government on that front?
Yeah, well, I mean, I dived straight into that section when I got the document and sort of came up gasping for reassurance that there might be more to it than this, and there isn't. And Thomas said there, this document, you know, will say how the government will operate over the next 5 years. The how is actually missing. So there's a lot of restatement of the current policies, which are fundamentally sound climate policies, but they're not delivering the emissions reductions in great enough quantities or fast enough. And we're 5 years to our main sort of target deadlines. So how we're going to accelerate that is just not, it's not spelled out in this. It is kind of business as usual. But with the kind of concerning wording that there's a lot of comfort in this document for key problematic, important but problematic industries. So data centres, aviation, agriculture. It's all about expansion and the economy in general. And they're talking about, you know, expansion, growth, you know, while decarbonising. And there's no how. There's no how.
And how do you read that assurance around energy supplies? What do you think that means?
Well, it's not specified in this, but obviously there's always been code when we talk about energy security. The key focus of the energy security review was LNG, liquefied natural gas. And that requires a whole set of new infrastructure in this country. It would require a huge amount of investment. And the worry is, of course, that that's long-term buy-in, long-term lock-in of a whole new fossil fuel supply chain. That's absolutely, you know, completely contradictory to what we're trying to do.
And the race ratio then, the 2-to-1 ratio between public transport investment and roads, that's gone?
It's not here. Maybe it's not gone, but certainly not here. And it was one of those things that was memorable in the last programme for government. And it did, you know, hang over there all sorts of decisions. So the fact that it's gone is worrying. And the fact that there's, you know, commitment to new road projects, you know, because there are several very large, these are not just small projects. And even the Green Party accepted that, you know, the towns needed bypasses and so on to bring life and, you know, manageability back into town centres. But there are some very major road projects out there, you know, that we can see that might be brought back to life.
Can you bring any clarity to that? What will be the spending split now between the two?
The spending split is likely to be the same or actually higher in terms of public transport to roads. But the problem up to now in the last number of years is that roads projects have been sort of knocked off the table. That can't happen because some of them are badly needed, and we've had significant problems with road maintenance and the budgets for that as well. So that's not going to be an issue under this government. But we're still going to be spending significant amounts on public transport. And in fact, if you look on page 55, I mean, one of the headings is accelerating decarbonisation and the modal shift in transport, which is obviously really, really key to achieving our climate targets, which have to be reset out in the programme for government because they're set out at national and international level in law.
There's mention of a new sort of sustainable mobility strategy in that. We have one and it was kicked around almost until it was lost over the last government. So why is there going to be a new one? Why is that going to be presumably going to be
delayed?
You
can't on the one hand say, well, there's no new ideas or we're stuck in the policies of the past. We're stuck in terms of what we've agreed to do, which is to reduce our emissions. We have national and international binding targets on emissions, European and national level. They're there and we have to comply with them. That's
but your light on the how is what Caroline is saying.
I wouldn't say that at all. I mean, there's a considerable amount of detail about how we actually change on transport, how we change on renewables, get those renewable energies, you know, keep accelerating them, make sure they're happening. Look at other aspects of renewable energy that haven't been looked at before. And like you talk about constituency projects, I mean, the number one project for my constituency is the Navan Rail Line. And lots of my colleagues across the parties and the independents will be looking at major public transport projects that we want to see delivered. But the key thing is we want to see them delivered. There was a lot of talk about these projects and that has to change. And I think that's what's going to happen. We're going to have a new cabinet committee in infrastructure to drive these projects forward, particularly in the transport sphere, because that is an area certainly where there is a lack in this country and that has to change.
OK, Alison, anything to say on the climate targets and mention of climate change policy in here?
Yeah, I mean, my heart just sank listening to Caroline because that was my impression of it. And obviously, she has the expertise in this area, you know, and confirming my sort of worst suspicions on the programme for government. Like, there are no climate champions in government now, unless they're hiding. I think Micheál Martin maybe a little
champion.
Bit...
And Micheál is a climate champion.
You're hiding it. Hiding
I am
it well,
absolutely
Thomas.
Not hiding it.
And,
absolutely not hiding it.
Certainly, I would not get the impression from Simon Harris that he is. And, you know, there are certain things we have to do by law, by our own laws, by European directives. But if you even look at something like the Nitrates Directive and how that's kicked about and all these ridiculous commitments.
You've pledged to fight on that, and that is an EU law, the Nitrates Derogation.
That's a completely fake fight. Well, it's not going to happen.
We have a derogation of the Nitrates Directive. We want to continue with that. But what I've also seen as well, on the other hand, and this is never acknowledged, the work of farmers to contribute to making sure that we have a clean water supply. And one of the first events I went to after the election was to visit a farm where there was a Tagusk and one of the dairy co-ops looking at this issue in a scientific way on the farm as to what farmers could do. And I have to say,
but
I said to the farmer, I said that to the farmers,
people
need to know about what you're doing.
No, but
on the
ground.
Very
but
quiet
ever,
there, Matt.
We don't hear.
I was actually waiting to be for the invite, maybe.
Well, it's just because Friends of the Earth, when they looked at the Sinn Féin manifesto on climate, they gave you an E.
Yeah, and the difficulty, I have to say, from my perspective, is that the last government were very good at setting targets. They were abysmal at actually reaching them. I was an agriculture spokesperson, as you know, for the party for a large portion of the last term. And we had huge difficulty in terms of engaging because we say there was a whole raft of areas where farmers were eager to play a part. And forestry is a good example. Organics is another area where people were willing to make the move. The last programme for government actually had a commitment to plant 8,000 extra hectares of afforestation each year. They barely reached that over the whole course of the term. And that was despite the fact that you had farmers, foresters, the opposition demanding that government work with us so that we could actually set out a plan to realise that. But instead, what we saw time and time again was lecturing, hectoring, people accusing farmers, people who live in rural communities, as being part of the problem rather than working with them to achieve.
But you're against the carbon tax increases. Absolutely. You want to keep the derogation. I mean, if you think that climate change action is going to be kept on the back burner, surely you would welcome that.
What I want to actually see is real action that has a meaningful impact. The carbon tax for people who I represent, for people who, my neighbours who left their home this morning in their car, the carbon tax has just made their lives more difficult. Hasn't done anything for the environment because they don't have the money to transfer to an electric car. They don't have a public transport option. They have fossil fuel heated home and they don't have the money to retrofit their home. And there is no mechanism within the current government schemes to do that.
One of the purposes of the carbon tax is to...
That's a ruse. That is an absolute ruse.
Funding into social welfare, into fuel allowance, put funding into retrofitting homes and put funding into agri-environmental schemes as well.
There's people in your constituency no more than mine who hear all of that and are wondering, when is that support coming to me? Because all they have experienced from the carbon tax is money being taken out of their pocket. No support for actually making the changes that are required. And that's why I would have hoped that we had a different approach, because we have all agreed across political lines that yes, we have obligations, we need to meet climate targets. What we have been calling out is let's have a universal achieve that.
One of the important things to me now that the Greens are no longer in government, both Thomas and Matt mentioned farmers, is the iron grip that the farming lobby has generally on whoever is in government. And they're not, you could say that there's farmers are, you know, represent a large group, all with different thinking. But you would think from the IFA and the ICMSA that there's only one particular school of thought. It is all very much couched in terms of almost like being like a war, and that they're being put under this unsustainable pressure rather than we have this climate crisis, everyone has to work together. I'm not saying that they shouldn't get compensated, they should. And I will just finally say also, the farming media as well could take a look at how they present
this. We have to leave it there. Thank you all very much for coming in. We'll take a break back after this.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.